Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, you're listening to Sup Doc Podcast. I'm Parker Romaine.
And I'm George Chen. And this is a show where we talk to interesting people with strong opinions about their favorite documentaries. Today, we're going to be talking about the HBO documentary, My Depression, The Up and Down and Up of It, with comedian and podcaster Hannah Michaels.
Hannah, welcome to the weird apartment.
Thank you.
In LA. I don't live here. Paco doesn't live here. But this is the apartment that he was subletting, and I'm now subletting it from him. So I'm like a third degree subletter. This is what's happening.
And that person has a Kids in the Hall hat.
That's me.
Oh, okay.
I am the... Yeah, this is a 90s Kids in the Hall hat.
Oh, nice.
And you're a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a podcast, or you had a podcast. Is the podcast still going, Free Therapy?
It is. It's just on hiatus while I learn to edit it. Because it turns out I'm bad at those things. But I'll figure it out. We had, Brock Wilbur was editing the first two episodes, and now, I thought it was rude to just make him keep doing free stuff, so, figuring it out.
And, randomly, I don't know how we've never done a show together, but we know a bunch of people in common. Actually, Brock is the one who, like, I think brought you to my attention, because he keeps referencing you a lot. But you know Michael Feierstein.
Yeah.
How is that connected? How are you, like, a smell kid? Are you, like, one of that era of, like, those guys?
I didn't discover the smell until I met my boyfriend. And now I love a lot of the bands that play there, but I hate to say discovered certain music through a guy, because that feels really... But I did.
Uh-huh. That's what happened. Is he a musician, or he's...
No, he just hangs out with a lot of musicians. He's also a comic.
And, the reason I thought it's interesting is, so we're going to be talking about My Depression, the up and down and up of it, which your dad is a therapist?
Yeah.
And that's what the Free Therapy show is based on?
Yeah. Both my parents are therapists.
Uh-huh.
And I have depression, so I feel like I probably know... I don't know enough about this.
Yeah. I didn't know very much about... When I saw the promo for this, which is on just like a preview on HBO, I thought it looked just like the pharmaceutical ads for depression.
Yeah.
Like, it has a look and feel of that, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like,
very
it's
much.
Really, like, really simple line-drawn animation. The woman who... I didn't realize it was based on a book. I researched it a little bit. Elizabeth Swatos... is a musical theater composer, director, and I guess she had written, like, sort of not a children's book. This isn't for kids. It does feel a little bit like for kids, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it started, it's like PG-13. I'm like, who is this geared towards? It was kind of confusing. So it's based on a storybook, and it's just an animated version, I guess, of her illustrated struggle of her depression. I was kind of like, even on the fence of like, is this actually a documentary, other than the fact that HBO is putting it in their documentary section?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's, I mean, I guess it's autobiographical, but does that make something a documentary?
Well, I had the same question, because on this show, we play pretty fast and loose with the rules. Like, I was asking if I could do Persepolis, which to me is like a memoir. But I only know the books, so I hadn't seen Persepolis. And then I had a bunch of people say, no, that's not a documentary. It's a memoir, and there's, like, voice actors. And this is, like, voiced by Sigourney Weaver. So it's like even one more remove of being Elizabeth Swannis's story, but also super abstracted and just kind of this vague of, like, this is what depression feels like. We're going to illustrate it, which was cute, I thought. Yeah. But it's weird. PG-13, cute, friendly, depression.
Why PG-13? That part I didn't get.
I looked into it a little bit. It seems like one of the people that sponsored it or was involved is this organization that helps with suicide prevention with college and high school students, which kind of makes sense. It's like a demographic of people that...
Oh, I guess the suicide song might make it PG-13.
Oh, you mean like what made it at all? Like over? Oh, I was thinking the other direction. You were thinking like it's not edgy enough, and I'm like it's a little edgy for yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, that suicide song is pretty good. It's also I didn't know at the time. I read the later. It's Steve Buscemi. So like just there's a scene where the character feels like. She's gonna. Also, the animation kind of reminds me of like Doug, that kids show Doug, like the colors
and the
noses. Yeah, she has red hair, and then this green monster comes out, and it's like it's like an ice cream truck man, but it's selling suicide, and it's Steve Buscemi singing the song, which I thought was pretty great. I guess so. Since she's a musical theater person, it makes sense that this is basically like a musical. It really skirts the line of documentary for me, but I was reading where. This woman from HBO, director of documentary programming, was like, well, there's a lot of animation in Montage of Heck, so they just liked it as a technique. So it is hard to say who this is for. Who would you recommend this movie to?
I would say baby boomers who don't know much about depression, because I feel like it captures baby boomer humor very well.
Okay, right. And how do you define the what about it seems like baby it's hard to say baby boomer humor. I want to throw other words in there. I mean, I think she is like a boomer. She's like 60 or something. Yeah.
I think baby boomer humor is a lot simpler and a lot less less. I don't want to say less meta, but less jaded than Generation X or millennial humor. It's, you get the feeling that Generation X and millennial humor is kind of once removed. Like, here's something we all understand, and now I'm going to go a step further. Whereas baby boomer humor is very on the nose.
Okay, I could see that, definitely. And that's interesting. You are more of a millennial, I would take it.
I guess so.
Or, you don't need to say.
I don't know.
Old you are for the thing, unless you feel like it.
I mean, I'm 27, so I count as a millennial.
Yeah.
But all my humor influences, I think, are mostly Generation X.
Right, like your Mr. Shows and your Kids in the Halls and whatnot.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's more my... Yeah, that's definitely where I fall. But, yeah, millennial humor is then referencing things that were already referential or parodies to start with, maybe.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when... Even when I was growing up watching certain cartoons, like when you even watch like old like Flintstones and things like that, they're kind of doing meta-referential humor in their own way, but it's just a different era. Like they're kind of doing the Honeymooners, right?
So, yeah, and then, that's true.
Yeah, I guess it's, so. Like that's an interesting generational gap. And your dad is a boomer then. Because I read about his thing, or he seems to fit into that.
My dad is he's a boomer, and he's very much a dad when it comes to his sense of humor.
Yeah.
Rat Race might be his favorite movie. He loves
it. Never seen it. I've heard good things.
It's very slapsticky.
Yeah.
It's very much like a...
Mr. Bean.
Yes,
Your dad loves Mr. Bean.
Exactly.
I like Blackadder, so it's like kind of in that pocket, but...
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, she's not making it super jokey, I feel like, with my depression. Like, it starts off, like, kind of autobiographical. I actually had to stop it. Like, I watched about, like, 15 minutes of it. I was like, I gotta stop this. I was like, I don't know if I actually like this.
Yeah.
I kind of am getting really off. But maybe because of that sense of humor that's in there or that sense of, like, this is so earnest and so, like, sincere. But if one will be sincere about a topic, I guess it should be, like, dealing with depression, so...
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Did it make you, when you got through the whole... I think it definitely gets better, I think, by the end.
Yeah.
And did it make you feel like... So you think the target audience is people like, her friends and family that were just like, why don't you just power through it? Like, people that have that attitude about mental health.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. It's, I think as someone with depression, it was not, you know, as engaging as it would have been. I felt like, oh, I already know this stuff. You know, I already know what it's like to just lie in bed and not feel like you could get up and do anything. So, yeah. But to explain that to someone is really difficult. So maybe a cartoon would be a good way to do it.
Yeah, I definitely have, watching this, I realized like, oh, I thought I've had some mild depression, but it was never quite that bad.
Yeah.
Is how I felt. And situational, it seemed mostly to be situational stuff. But I definitely have benefited from, like, looking into therapy and looking into medications and things like that and, like, messing around with that stuff. So, but, yeah, the first 15, 20 minutes of this felt real treacly and really, like, greeting cardsy.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, like, really slow-paced. I feel like that's another boomer thing. I'm just ragging on my parents at this point.
well, it's yeah. Attention span thing has changed through the generations.
For sure.
I think.
Definitely. It felt like, it felt a little bit like an episode of This American Life, just the way it's paced in the narration.
I could see that too, yeah. I definitely saw that. This, like, it's also weird, it's this weird half-hour slot, which I'm like, where do you even throw that on HBO? Is this just, like, airing between, like, all the between Silicon Valley or whatever other half hour shows they have just to buffer time.
Yeah.
I think I got around to liking it by the end, but yeah, it felt very earnest. It felt very like an advertisement and very greeting cardsy.
Yeah.
And that's was my main critique of it. But I realize it's the kind of thing where maybe if you look at it, like, it's kind of a piece of, you could say, is it a piece of like activist documentary? I don't know that it necessarily is. It has, like, an agenda, though. It's sort of, like, trying to get people to seek help.
Yeah. Yeah, and get people who don't have depression to, like, understand it. And it's definitely at least relatable. Like, the idea that you feel like you have to apologize for everything. I mean, I really relate to that. Yeah, I don't know.
I know it isn't really specifically addressed in the movie, but reading it, she's bipolar, I think, is what it was. And then her family had a history of depression and suicide and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all this stuff that, like, yeah, that didn't make it all the way in the cartoon. It, like, a little bit was there, but I'm like, oh, yeah, I could see there being there's a whole bunch of stuff that's so specific to her experience, and she wanted to make it more, like, at least, like, relatable for other people.
That makes sense. Although a lot of people with depression have family histories of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's why everyone in my family is a therapist.
like, they've all experienced it, or they all, like, want to try and fix it.
Oh, both.
Yeah, both things.
Yeah, either they've indirectly experienced it, or they've directly experienced it. I don't know. I'm pretty sure my dad has OCD, if you've seen his sock drawer. We all have something. I can't think of a single one of us that doesn't have something.
So both your parents' therapists probably met in school or something? Or
oh, yeah.
Met in practice or something?
Yeah, they met in school. And then my aunt and uncle are also therapists.
Whoa.
And my grandmother is a therapist. And my other grandmother studied to be a therapist.
And so they're okay with you doing comedy?
Yeah. Fortunately, they've treated comics.
Yeah.
So, like, they know... They know what it's like, and they know that most comics, or maybe just me, tend to get fired a lot.
From
regular work. So they're a little more patient with me than the normal parents would, because they've just seen it in their patients.
Do you currently have a day job?
I do not. That's another thing.
Yeah, that's why you're like, you're cat sitting in different places and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's part of it. I want to learn web design.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a goal.
Did you go to school?
I did, but I majored in anthropology, which translates to nothing.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't do... You can't do too much.
No.
Like, cultural, or, like, there's like, more, like, physical anthropology, or there's more, like... Right, like, breaking it down. Like, I guess one track is, like, kind of, like, archaeological.
Yeah.
One track is more, like, let's look at the evolution of people.
Yeah.
Did you like any particular track in there, or...
I kind of bounced around. Archaeology was probably my favorite, but it's also the most tedious to actually do.
Yeah.
And I get sunburned easily. So.
Oh, yeah. That is... yeah, Indiana Jones had to deal with a lot of skin rashes and blotches, probably. Yeah, like, yeah, archaeology... I never got into it, but I have a friend who is... who did that as an undergrad, and then he worked at a firm, and it's this stuff of just like, well, I go to this place, and I set up like a bunch of lasers, and then the lasers scan everything, and then we kind of dig around in that. Like, it's actually does sound like pretty tedious. It's like field work, it sounds pretty tedious for that, but it is the most interesting stuff to me, like sort of like ancient civilizations and things like that. I wish I kind of, I guess I can just teach myself that by... reading, but so you're not like on a grad school path or anything like that.
If I fail at comedy, then yes.
That is it is the backup plan for many of us, comedy and the thing after comedy. So you don't want to become a therapist. That's not of interest to you. You don't want to deal with people on that level.
No, I mean, I feel like I might be good at it just because I was raised in it so much, and I know, you know, I've seen firsthand what to do and what not to do just by watching my parents' learning process. But I also feel like I would just hate myself for giving in to that family pressure. It's both my cousins, or no, I think one of them is stopped, but one of my cousins is studying to be a therapist, and I'm so confused. Like, why are you following in this? You've seen how our family gets along and operates. We diagnose each other every single
So how's Thanksgiving? Gathering. Yeah. It's just like everyone sort of is, everyone is gathered at, like, the grandma's house, and then they're just analyzing each other, and, like, not, everyone's like, well, what do you mean by that? Is that kind of what it's like?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of, what do you mean by that? How do you feel about that? It's so weird. It's so weird. And because you can't turn it off. It's like, yeah. It's like how forensic anthropologists can look at someone and they have to see their skeleton. They can't help it.
Okay, explain forensic anthropology. I don't really know that.
Basically, dealing with the evidence that's left after a crime.
Okay.
Forensic anthropology. So dealing with, like, degradation of bones and stuff like that.
Okay. So forensics as a science. I didn't realize it was like forensic anthropology because it is specifically about humans. So it's all like murder. Were you into that? Were you like going to like become, get into like that CSI stuff?
It was really cool to me, but I was bad at it. Uh-huh. I'm not good with the sciences. I mean, I'm good enough, but I have to study harder than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's medical anthropology is another area I've heard about, which is, I that could be a number of different things, I guess. But, and are you only child?
I have a brother, who is perfect, and it's infuriating. He works for Google now.
Oh, older?
Younger.
Younger? A Googler. That's where I'm up in that area. Not that I do that, but I'm, like, up in the Bay, so yeah. Does he work down here or up there?
Up there.
Yeah. So he's a Googler. How do your parents feel about that?
He's the one they bring up at parties. They don't bring me up. He's the one that they get to...
Well, you don't live at home, do you?
No.
No, so that's not even a, that's not a, an issue or anything. So looking at... How would you... If you were to do a storybook, picture book... chronicling your depression, how would you approach that? Like, what kind of illustration style would you do? Would it be more like Edward Gorey? Would it be more like goth? What would, like, be the way you would handle, like, I'm gonna describe my depression in an illustrated form and then animate it?
I am
like Batman the Animated Series.
I'm not even gonna attempt to pronounce the guy's name because I'm gonna butcher it. But the guy who did Invader Zim and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, it would probably be like that style.
I don't know the guy's name either, but yeah, that's, yeah, I know what you're talking
Johan
about.
Johan Velasquez?
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
His first name is, I can't, I should know how to pronounce people's names because I have just the worst name. But yeah, it would probably be that style, and there would probably be a lot of just terrible suicide jokes. I don't think anyone would watch it.
Uh-huh.
That's how I cope, is just, like, the worst jokes in the world. When when my boyfriend was being considered for an SNL job. I can't talk about whether or not he's gotten it, but when he was being considered for an SNL job, I just wrote like this slew of terrible Phil Hartman jokes. I'm basically a monster who should not be held up for the as an example of depression.
But yeah, I guess I asked you to do this one because I was like, what would you want to do? This seems like a good one. Is there any documentary that you would have chosen otherwise that you're a fan of?
I recently saw, or I saw again, Paris is Burning at Cinefamily, mm-hmm. and I really loved that. I love, like, drag culture and mm-hmm. things like that, and I would have loved to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad to have the opportunity to watch something new.
Yeah, totally. I think the metaphor that they use in there is just a cloud that follows her around, and then by the end, it just becomes about, you know, acknowledging the cloud or boxing the cloud or, you know, just being nicer to yourself. There is that one moment in there that I related to in that it's a thing that people said forever. And it almost seems counter the message of the movie. There's that thing of, like, when someone wants you to do something and then if you just fake it till you make it, like, just hold up the happy face and, like, smile, and then you might actually smile, which is, like, there's another comic in San Francisco, Kevin O'Shea, who has this joke about his therapist telling him to practice smiling in a mirror, and it's just, like, that sounds wrong on a lot of levels. That sounds like some Tony Robbins shit,
yeah.
But then it does have some validity to it. I don't know, have you been told that kind of thing in the past? Because that's so close to, like, just learn to just be happy.
You know?
Like, just pretend you're happy until you are.
I've never been able to do that, but I think some people have. And I think there's some sort of... There's definitely something ingrained in our brains to where if you make the facial expression, it actually has mm-hmm. a mental effect. At the same time, whenever I hear something like that, it's just a fuck you.
Yeah, that's right? That's kind of how it feels. There is a thing, there's like a couple things that I've been told, like, and then I think there's some truth to, like, if you are, and she kind of chronicles that idea of, like, if you're just, like, want to sit in bed and watch, like, nonstop SVU for 24 hours and not get up and walk your dog or feed your dog, that's just kind of how it is. And I kind of relate to that. I mean, I think I've been in periods like that. And then people say, just go for a walk. Just physically move your body through space. And that's a true thing of we're biologically just meant to be walking and not just sitting on our asses and staring at something for, like, 24 hours a day. So there's something to that. And also, like, I think ADD now is not... I heard, and maybe it wasn't ADD, but there's something, like, ADD is not... It's so common that they were just taken out of the DSM or whatever, because it's just, like, it's just what life is like now.
Yeah.
You just cannot focus on any one thing. Like, I cannot finish, like, a book. I can read, like, a Huffington Post article. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
That's all I can do. Maybe a New Yorker piece. That's about it. So, that's, like, yeah, like, that's, those bits of, like, kind of, you know, platitudes or, like, very generic advice about depression, I feel like she earns enough credit by just laying her own vulnerability out there that you can accept that she's, like, okay, well, this worked for me, it might not work for you, and they are very specific about saying that.
Yeah.
What have you found to be helpful for your own situation?
You know, the only thing I've found that consistently works is comedy. And it doesn't pick me up out of momentary depression, but it makes my general outlook better.
So just you performing, not necessarily watching comedy.
No, watching comedy does the opposite.
Some people are like, that's like that when, well, I guess we talked about Robin Williams briefly, but like a lot of people were posting that a joke from Watchmen about the guy going to the doctor and be like, go see Pagliacci, he's the famous clown. He's like, I am Pagliacci. Like, just going to watch comedy, yeah, could just put you in a... It's a lot of it's pretty dark, and for Some of it's intentionally dark, some of it's unintentionally dark. I think that's the one that you're going to get the most triggered by, if that's the right word. I don't know if trigger is the right word in that situation, but...
I think the Ha Ha Cafe open mic would trigger a lot of things in me.
Mm-hmm.
There are just... I think there's a... There are just certain open micers that have been placed on Earth in order to trigger my depression.
Mm-hmm.
But comedy itself has helped a lot, and I don't... I've tried literally every... No, not Prozac. But other than that, literally every medication that exists, and every kind of medication that exists. And
and they talk about three kind. Like there's, I don't really understand the science. Do you know the science? The
somewhat
uptake inhibitors and I really love the song in my favorite thing in this movie is the song, which I guess is Fred Armisen. It's like kind of like a Kraftwerk Devo kind of song being sung by little medication bottles, and maybe it's just the fact that it's like it's not that. Other style of drawing that's happening is really part of it. It's like, it's a fun song on its own, but like, oh, the drawing style changed. Thank God. Like I got relieved to see a different kind of drawing style. And it's just like a fun little tune.
Two receptors, detectors, the chemicals are flowing across the gaps, the synapse, the chemicals keep going. If there's too much or too little, everything's out of whack. We need antidepressants, get our mood back on track.
So you've tried a bunch of different medications. Are you an animal person?
Yeah.
Okay, because like they have like, she's got a dog in here. It's never really like addressed, but it's like the dog is doing all this stuff on the side.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like this is that one thing of like, having something else you have to take care of, does it kind of force you to get out of your own zone a little bit?
A little bit. I had a mentally ill boyfriend for a while that's kind of like a dog. if I had a house with a yard, I'd get a dog instantly. They do help. When I grew up, we had actually a poodle, and he helped all of us with our own little things. Like, he could tell when my mom's feet were hurting, and he would jump up on the bed and start licking her feet.
Whoa.
Because she has osteoarthritis that's really painful. Like, he just knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how we've, like, bred dogs to just understand our body language and understand our gestures. I mean, you could point and a puppy will know what that means.
Right. Yeah, you're right, they've been involved. They rely on us for everything, so they just are so tuned in and empathetic. Yeah. Do you hear about that cat that knows when people are going to die?
No.
I want to say it's like a hospital, like, or a hospice, like in Maine or something, and there's just like a cat that wanders the ground, and it just shows up at your doorstep and waits at the foot of your bed when people are ready to pass, because it's like a hospice.
Oh, so that's
just
so creepy.
It just has like, it's, and like, yeah, like that's very different than a dog. Like, the dog would maybe just come and lick your hand, but the cat's just like, all right. It's just like, imagine just like,
and now we wait.
Moving its paws, like, one more for my scorebook. No, animals I think are good. I remember having. I also being really, really incredibly sad. I was like thinking like how much I cried when I had to have my cat put down. It was like so intense and like specifically depressing in a way that had nothing to do with like me.
Yeah.
Kind of. It was also because I had to make the decision. That was the thing that was the hardest thing about it. It's like when I'm like, oh shit, I didn't want this responsibility. And I haven't had a pet since then because I'm like, I don't know if I can go through that again of like having that responsibility of like, I gotta decide it's time for this to stop. And that, so, well, I just got real sad. I was just trying to say that just having that other, having a relationship that is nonverbal, that is completely, they completely need you and they're completely dependent on you. Even a cat is sort of, if you have an indoor cat, it still needs you so much. But to me, as a comic and someone who is out of town a lot, it's just like, ugh, one more responsibility.
Yeah.
So I could see that. Comedy, for you, what is it about it for you that is helping you?
I think the ability to be understood. I was a really weird kid. On top of depression, I had a lot of social anxiety, so I was just really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
because I would do things, I would be like over the top in order to, and weird in order to compensate for just being anxious, which is how Gilbert Gottfried was invented, I think.
Oh, like that's how they created that persona for him?
I think so.
I think it's
just got so used to having that bad reaction from kids in school that he started loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I think a lot of roasters get started. It's just like being really into that, ugh.
Yeah, any reaction is a good reaction at that point. So you had general... I definitely also had, I guess, social anxiety. But I feel like there was a point where... I think some people, if they own their social anxiety and make... Yeah, like they like you're saying, Gilbert Gottfried or something like that. If you can kind of like own it or make it part of your thing, or that seems to be like one way to just be... more comfortable in your own skin.
Or owning anxiety in general. Maria Bamford does that very well.
Mm-hmm. So when you are on stage, you talk about a lot of the issues that of being depressed, or you make suicide jokes, or how are you processing stuff in a way that's like, it's therapeutic for you?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I don't. None of my jokes are directly about mental illness, but a lot of my jokes are indirectly about mental illness,
mm-hmm.
and the way I think and things like that. I have one thing where it's just I perform a bunch of cheers for different like parts of my body. It's really bizarre, and it's supposed to be because this guy from my improv class told me to do that to be more confident on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually because this is how I think, and this is mm-hmm. what I think about each part of me that
mm-hmm.
is, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of it is indirectly about that stuff, or the reaction that I get for doing comedy.
The reaction that you get?
Yeah.
Oh, like you talk about, like, how you're perceived, or when you...
A little bit.
Yeah.
I've been told things like, which I'm sure a lot of female comedians get, like, you don't have to do comedy, you have tits, which
mm-hmm.
is, like, how do you respond to that? Like, unless they honk, I'm pretty sure that's not...
yeah.
It's not a substitute.
Well, yeah, I mean, that I can't say that I know what it's like to be a female comic. I mean, it's obviously not a thing that is I've had to deal with, but I empathize that there is... and that's the thing we've been talking about a lot in the Bay Area is, like, maybe having, like, specifically female-friendly mics or, like, safe space mics, which I don't know. Actually, I don't know if I'm using the terminology properly when I say safe space. I mean, I think just something that is, like, you know, anti-misogynist, like, as an open mic, which is hard for me to say, like, in terms of... What we've been talking about is just, like, making sure, like, this, there's, like, not, the people that are there are not going to be harassing. As far as, like, what happens on the mic itself, like, the spoken, we don't, like, I can't imagine putting a restriction on that, because everyone just has to work through their worst, like, you know, Holocaust jokes and things like that. It's, like, there's no way to protect that, but definitely protecting people is a priority, and people's safety and stuff is a main thing. It does seem like down here, just club comedy is such a big thing down here, and I feel like we don't even make that distinction up in the Bay Area, because there's not enough of us to really make a distinction between, like, club and alt or anything. We're just, like, all the comics kind of got to go to the same places. But, definitely, it's more bro-y down here in certain circles. I haven't been to all the clubs, so I don't know that as a reality other than people I've seen that have come up through the Bay Area. I'm like, oh, this is a person who, like, is a club comic from L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that part I could see being depressing. So everyone's kind of... But at the same time, yeah, everyone's kind of... All those people, they're depressed, and they're working through their misogynist problems.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So they're trying to figure it out also. So it's really just, like... it is, like, good. It does seem like a lot of open mics are, like, kind of... Oh, the safety nets of society don't work. Here's an open mic. Here's, like, one more place you could go to, like, vent your frustrations.
Can't afford therapy? Go to the comedy store.
Yeah. So, And that seems like, so that's, you're actually, like, saying that's a thing for you. I mean, it's just being heard, being heard by anyone. Really.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe what it is, partly.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I felt a lot like, as a kid, that I was put through therapy in order to achieve my parents' goals.
And oh, so they sent you to therapy as a kid.
Yeah. And I really felt like they didn't listen to me at all. They just figured out a way to diagnose me with something and medicate me, which is pretty common in child therapy, because, like, therapy only works if the patient wants it to work.
Right, and you're a child, you're just acting out.
Yeah. So it's pretty hard to make child therapy. I mean, I'm not saying it never works. Mm-hmm. Obviously it works sometimes, but it's a much murkier thing.
Were you put on Ritalin or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I was on Adderall until a couple years ago when I started feeling little pinpricks on my skin, and I realized, like, oh, this is what crackheads are talking about when they talk about, like, feeling bugs. Uh-huh. So I had to stop.
So it's addictive for you? Because that's basically a form, it's similar. I've just heard that it's chemically similar to speed and stuff, so.
It's basically slower acting, slightly milder meth.
Mm-hmm.
And because you don't smoke it, it's digested more slowly, which is good and bad. It's bad because it builds up in your system.
Oh, okay.
A lot more than meth. Mm-hmm. Which doctors refuse to acknowledge, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my therapist told me it'll be out of your system immediately, and I still felt jittery for, like, a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they've done studies that something that's much shorter acting and much more easily metabolized does stay in your system. So I don't know why you're not willing to acknowledge that something that's metabolized more slowly stays.
Mm-hmm. And you were taking it since you were a little kid.
Since I was in high school.
High school, okay. So 10 years-ish.
Something like that, yeah.
And are you currently on anything, or do you feel like talking about it, or you don't have
to?
Oh,
no, I don't mind. Yeah. I'm currently on what is it called? It's Brintellix. Mm-hmm. I just started taking it. I don't want to get too, you know what, screw it, I'll get graphic. Good news is I can fuck.
It's one of those ones, some of them, like, inhibit your libido.
Yeah, and it's an SSRI, so it should be doing that to me, but it doesn't. Because everyone's different. I don't really know. It also, I think it also blocks some serotonin receptors in addition to blocking the reuptake, so maybe that's why.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm on a subclinical dose, so that might also be why.
So it's still a prescription thing, but it's like a not as intense of a dose.
Yeah, it's I take the smallest dose that you can be prescribed and put it and cut it.
Yeah.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
I only a couple years ago, and I think this was at a point where I was specifically depressed. Like my dad had just died, I got dumped, and then I quit my job. So I had this and then I was in a car accident. I wasn't really injured in the car accident, but it was just like, okay, so let's throw everything in a year's time, all those things happen. So, after that for a while, I decided I was just gonna, like, deal with what I'm, like, I have ADD. I've always had it. I've never dealt with it. I was never given the option of drugs, or maybe my parents were given the option of drugs. I'm a little older than you, so I don't think it was as popular at the time. But other people I've talked to have said that they were, you know, so it might have just been that my parents, these Chinese parents were like, I'm not giving my child this thing. So yeah, I kind of experimented. I went to just my doctor or my HMO or whatever, and I got some this stuff, which is basically like a version, it's like a generic version of what's called Wellbutrin.
Oh, yeah.
Which people use for like quitting smoking and stuff. And I found it very helpful, and I resisted drugs like forever because I don't even drink. I don't even do any other drugs. So I was just like, why would I do something just because it's like pharmaceutical? But I think I had hit this point. I'm like, I'm just willing to try anything to do something differently. And I think it's been pretty good for me. I found it pretty useful. So I've told other people, you know, that it's worth looking into for sure, like drugs. I don't know if I had a philosophical or like an ethical reason not to do them so much as I was maybe just like scared. I'm like, I don't know what these are going to do.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be addicted to anything. And now I know kind of like, well, I know what it's like if I don't take these for a while, people will notice that I'm like real irritable. And I'm like, oh, it's probably like that for like 30 years, you know? I was real irritable for a lot of my life. So it's something that makes me less irritable and less like prone to like spiraling kind of thinking. Which is, I don't know if that's a variation of what, you know, what anxiety is sometimes that. It's just like,
for sure.
Oh no, where I just let, like, anything, like, oh, this person doesn't like me, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let it turn into a giant thing that is on my back. That occasionally, like, I'll just be, like, working on something completely different on my computer, and I'll just think of an embarrassing situation that happened to me, like, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And just be like, fuck!
And that'll just,
I just yell, like, fuck! And then that's it. It's just like, okay, that's fine. I just got it out. I just yelled, fuck. And that was it. Or, you know, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but comparing it to this documentary, I've never personally felt, like, suicidal. I felt, like, this feeling of, it would be fine if I just, like, sunk into the floor and no one was, like, no one noticed. Like, it'd be fine. You know, which is,
yeah.
I feel like, it was, like, a thing of, like, I don't feel, like, actively doing anything about this, but I definitely am, like, gonna, like, either overeat or undereat or do something like weirdly passively getting the same effect, you know?
Yeah.
Or having road rage, which
yeah.
is like another problem that I personally have. But the way that she describes her specific bipolar experiences did not resonate with me, really. I don't know if you've... getting back to the film, you know, like taking your life experiences with the film, what do you feel like is relatable to you from the film?
Well, I feel like it makes sense that she's bipolar because it seems like she has cycles.
Yeah.
Whereas I have a much more constant lower level depression.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so bad that I can't get out of bed most days, you know, and I can, I'm not going to say I can take care of myself yet, but I'm close.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you have support, though, yeah.
I do.
You feel like you have, I mean, having the therapist parents probably is a double-edged sword. Like,
it is.
Yeah.
It is. It was awful when I was a kid, and now it's great.
Yeah.
It's, you know, things are a little easier for me, too, because my parents live in L.A., so I'm moving, so that's going to go away. But the fact that I have that safety net makes things a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that I could go over to their house whenever I want, you know, or not whenever I want, but, you know, whenever I really need them, that helps a lot.
When you were a kid and they were taking you to see child therapists, was it like, oh, this is my friend Bill, he's going to talk to you, and like, it's not really explained to you, or like you knew what was going on, or when you were a kid?
They explained it to me, and I resented it, so maybe they shouldn't have no, I would have figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
I was a smart but evil child.
Okay, let's get into that. What's your evil side?
I think I might have talked about this on Free Therapy, just as a way to apologize to Dad. but I wanted because I was mad at my parents for something, I wanted my teachers to think that my parents abused me. So, I was like 7 years old.
Wow. And you knew at that age, I'm like, I can get them in trouble. I know how to get them in trouble.
It was not only that, I didn't tell them my parents abused me because I thought, oh, they won't believe me.
Yeah.
Whenever I got an answer wrong or something, I would hit myself because I thought, oh, she thinks this is normal.
So it wasn't like they were seeing bruises. They just saw you actively hitting yourself in the arm?
Yeah. And I would do that thing where you hold your eyes open long enough that you have tears.
I don't know that.
Oh, that's right. Normal people don't know that thing.
I don't have a trick to cry.
That's right.
I've heard that pulling a nose hair also works.
I've heard that too. Pretty painful. Or tweezers.
So you would fake being abused by your parents to get them in trouble.
Yeah. Oh my God. I also the first child therapist they went to. Actually, here's what happened recently, which is I called my mom to tell her, hey, I'm doing this storytelling show about that time that I lashed out at a child therapist. And I meant the time I stabbed a child therapist in the eye with an umbrella.
Oh, my God.
She was fine. I should preface that with you. And she said, oh, you mean the time you broke that guy's china cabinet? Which I don't remember.
Yeah, so there's a whole other one you don't remember. The stabbing the umbrella, what was there a thought process there?
Not a good one.
Yeah.
She was really condescending.
Uh-huh.
I was 8. But she would, end all her sentences with, yeah, which just annoyed me so much. Yeah. And it just, I got to, a breaking point one day. Because my parents, I kept asking them, please let me stop seeing her. Please let me stop seeing her. And they wouldn't let me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took it out on her. and I feel so bad. It was one of those, those umbrellas that have, the animal heads?
Okay, so it wasn't a sharp head.
Oh, no, it was a duck. It was a duck. Yeah.
Duck is sharper than a lion. In that case, actually, a duck is more dangerous than a lion. I could see that. But, so she was fine.
She was fine.
Okay, so... Yeah, I can see why you wouldn't want to become a therapist now. This is making a lot more sense. And, yeah, I'm picturing this little Wednesday Addams child running around, a very Edward Gorey childhood.
I hadn't seen that movie, but it came out when the actual film came out when I was in second grade, and all the kids at summer camp called me Wednesday, and I had no idea what that meant.
Wow.
It's flattering.
Were you a goth? Are you a goth? Do you have goth tendencies?
I goth it up sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Also,
I don't know what a millennial idea of a goth is. It's different than a Gen X goth. It's and you're not a Joy Division goth. You're maybe, I don't know what the new thing... I always see there's some new, weird, kind of insane clown posse-ish band that goth kids are attracted to.
Yeah.
It's weirdly, I don't know any goths that like insane clown posse. I don't think there's an actual musical overlap at all.
I don't know. I think the sort of goth style might be almost divorced from music.
I think so. I think you're right. Yeah, for this generation, that might be the case. Or people younger than you, even, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being pretty, into, The Smiths, which was pretty much, the most... But I thought that it was hilarious. I thought they were funny.
Yeah.
And they are funny, is the thing about it. I think people kind of, don't remember those things about... They just, think it's going to be, all, real sad veganism talk or something. But, that's one thing. Do you think that they could have added in this movie to... Or what would you have liked to have seen them do in this movie slightly differently? Assuming they had, another 10 minutes or something to throw in there.
Maybe there are a lot of, weird ironies that come with depression because you just see them more. You just see how the world is against you more. I'd like to see that a little bit, just going through someone's day and just the little things that people with depression notice and pile up as a pattern that people without it don't really notice. I don't know how to explain this.
So if you were to, start your day and go through just even looking in the mirror and then you immediately have, some, fuck you attitude to that. even though it's you, oh, it's you, but you're still kind of fuck you to that. Is that maybe, and then you just, have, your Terminator goggles going throughout the day? like when like the little like threats flash up on your Terminator vision.
Exactly.
Like, is it sort of like everyone is your? It's just a paranoia filter you have on.
Yeah.
Like your Instagram filter of like paranoia.
Yeah.
You feel that way a lot, or?
I mean. I do a little bit. I kind of feel like I'm in kind of a Daria world sometimes.
Okay.
Not just because my brother denies my existence.
Deep cut Daria references.
Yeah.
Who's your Jane? Brock? No.
Brock might be a good Jane. I actually would love to see Brock in that hair.
That would be good. Yeah, he could do it.
Yeah.
That seems like something that he maybe would have done at some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Daria is, like, Daria, it's almost like the thing you want. Like, Daria is, like, the Holden Caulfield of her era or something, right? She's kind of, like, the person who is pretty smart and, or precocious and deadpan.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a comic archetype.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that show in a while, but I remember it being great when it was on. I'm sure it holds up really well, actually. Because it wasn't so. Also, the 90s are back super hard. So
yeah.
It probably holds up extra well right now.
Probably. And she's situationally depressed, but in a way that won't go away. Like, she's depressed about society. That's never going to change. So even though she probably wouldn't have, like, a chemical imbalance,
mm-hmm.
there's something to be said for just being depressed about having to live in the world.
And right, like, you're basically, like, you're, until you're 18, you have to be in this institution, which is, like, high school.
Yeah.
And in her case, it's, like, a suburban high school, and just not, I haven't thought about Daria very much recently, but, like, I'm glad we're bringing it back to Daria. Better cartoon. Daria shed better light on depression than this does?
I don't know.
What if Daria just starts taking medication, like, in the last season of Daria?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, her being like, I pretended to smile, and then I smiled.
Yeah. I don't know.
Cutting in, like, is animation the... I feel like animation's a good way to talk about depression in this case, but yeah, it feels like it's not geared towards your generation.
It could be. I mean, I think actually BoJack Horseman is a cartoon about depression in a lot of ways.
Interesting.
I've
only seen the first one, but I mean, there's so many good jokes in that I should watch it more. And
Definitely, I think it's definitely about, especially the second season is, I'm not going to give anything away, but there's a lot about how BoJack is just kind of stuck being BoJack. He's just kind of stuck having that outlook and thinking like that, and there's not much you can really do to change that, which is something, especially with just having taken every medication that exists, and either having terrible side effects, or in the case like now, or most of the time, just helping but not enough. I feel like that's something that sort of pervades my life and probably pervades a lot of people's lives with depression.
Is BoJack Horseman taking medication on the show?
I don't think so. I mean, besides from excessive drinking.
Right. That's valid. That is what people do. It seems like that's a lot of the time what's happening is something like that. So you don't see it, do you see a therapist or are you anti-therapy in general?
I'm not anti-therapy in principle, but it brings up a lot of anger in me because of the way it was brought up.
Because your parents are already therapists. It's like how, that's not going to really do it for you, right? Yeah. I remember a scene in this movie where she's trying everything and then she's just like, I'm trying spirituality.
Yeah.
And it just like flashes through like a couple of, iconic, like, religious imagery, is that a thing that is in your family at all, or is that a thing that you think is helpful at all, maybe, spirituality?
I think it's helped certain members of my family. I don't think it would help me. I have a cousin now who's recently gone Orthodox, and it's really weird because he can't hug me anymore
because
I'm a lady.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've changed your diapers.
Yeah.
I don't think, like...
That is a weird direction to go, Orthodox. I mean, I can't help but feel a little bit weird about Orthodox, even though I'm not a Jew, clearly. I don't know that much about it, but I remember being in an Orthodox neighborhood in London where people were walking around in blackface because there's like this festival. I'm just like, what the fuck is happening here?
What is this festival?
Yeah, I think it was in October. I'm like, what is happening? October. I'm like, this can't, you could, A, like, this is just, like, this is not good. If this is happening in America, like, this, it couldn't happen
that
in America.
That would not happen.
And also, it looks like there is reasons why there's problems between different groups.
Yeah.
And I'm always just like, why, like, you, we gotta just minimize these problems. Just, can you just not do that? That'd
yeah.
be cool. It's like, oh, it's about the Moors or something. I'm like, still, I don't know the name of the holiday. Someone will, I'm sure, leave us a Twitter message about what the holiday is. And maybe there is some, there's no, in 2015, there's no justification for, like, a Jewish holiday that involves blackface. That's, I'm just going to go out and say that. I'm going to take a bold stand against blackface during this depression talk. But, so.
I don't know what holiday this is.
Yeah,
I've
I'll
never heard of this.
I'll have to look it up. I'm not religious personally. I went to like a Catholic school and that did not make me feel better about religion at all. But I think also because it is a thing that's a big thing, like in AA, right? You have to like at least identify whatever your source is or whatever your God, or goddess, figure is supposed to be. And I do get a little blocked about that stuff. And I'm like, I've thought, I think at this point when I was like trying all these different things, I mean, I wasn't trying a lot of things. I tried one drug and I tried working out at a gym. And only one have I stuck with. working out at a gym was pretty good. I found that pretty good. Do you do any physical activity like biking or exercising or hiking? Or
I'm actually going through physical therapy now for scoliosis.
Oh, geez.
I have noticed a difference on the days when I do it. I don't feel better so much as just stable for a good, you know, 5 hours after I do it.
Oh, do you have like intense back pains then?
Sometimes if I sit still for a while.
Should I have offered you a pillow?
I'm fine.
But the scoliosis has prevented you from doing a lot of physical activity in the past?
It prevents me from standing still. I can do a lot of activity, but if I stand still for a long period of time, it hurt. Like Disneyland is hell for me because it's just standing in line.
Yeah.
And that hurts a lot. Like I couldn't with my anthropology major, I could potentially take a museum job, except that I can't because it's a lot of standing still.
Okay, so this has been an ongoing problem for your whole since you've been a kid.
Oh no, my parents should not have bred. Yeah, it's been
just
a huge
genetic issue, yeah.
There's so many genetic issues. Everything that ends in osis I have. it's made me great at Scrabble, but it's not been so good for living.
Yeah. All the osises, all the OCs. The OCs, as it were. John Dwyer sponsored depression. So it sounds like you are taking steps to take care of yourself, and it's good you have a support network and having therapist parents that are, I guess, pretty forgiving and pretty, like...
Oh, they have to
at
be.
At this point, they're just like... Well, okay, so go back to when you were beating yourself as a child. What did that lead to?
Oh, my God.
Did you get a child services call?
They confronted my parents directly, and they kind of explained the whole thing. That I knew what I was doing.
Like, we've raised a demon seed, basically.
Exactly. I really did not... I made their lives very difficult, and they did the same for me, because it was just these people butting heads constantly, and they're, you know... Their entire lives are organized towards improving people and making people better. And all a child gets from that is, you're not good enough.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I have Chinese parents. It's very similar. It's a very similar phenomenon. There's a lot of you're not good enoughs happening. But when did you feel, like, do you feel like, I think there may be a thing I'm going to say, I might speak for you, but I'm like, for me, the stand-up thing, also came to me around the same time. Like, I'd been doing it a little bit, but then I found, like, oh, it's a thing that I have, that only I have control over. It doesn't really matter what your class background is, what your financial situation is, what your, I guess whether you're, there's a lot to work with that is just identity, but it's not predicated on, it's only predicated on you working on it. And yeah. The only way that you're going to improve is by just working on it. So I found that kind of interesting in a way that I never found in school. Like the idea of just like doing well in school to do well in school made very little actual sense to me. And I did okay. Yeah. I did had good and bad areas, but really just having one thing that was like very self-directed and being like, oh, I am in control of whether or not this is working.
Oh yeah.
I found that really useful.
Me too, for sure. My parents were the best students in the world, and they did not understand why I wasn't. And the one thing that I did that no one else in my family had ever done, and I couldn't compare myself to them, even though they thought my brother was the funny one. Because he's like a Borat type. He'll just like go up to people and play a slightly racist character. He just has that kind of personality in real life, but he couldn't necessarily write jokes.
Right.
This was just the one thing that I could do that they hadn't done.
Uh-huh. So there's a lot of your brother's a lot of my wife. Okay. Like, I like the idea that, like, yeah, Borat's not actually fun. Like, if you had an actual Borat, it wouldn't be a funny person.
No. It's funny because he's daring to do these things. Yeah.
A guy who just had no boundaries would be awful.
And that's why The Dictator sucked, because if you put Sacha Baron Cohen in front of a computer screen and tell him to write stuff, it's not funny the way it is, so when he just...
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I never saw that one, but that's right, it's like, it's not doing the pranking stuff in it, or is it a little bit of the pranking stuff in it, yeah.
Not so much. It's like an Adam Sandler movie, really.
Oh god. we'd love to have you on the show, Adam. I have a little brain fart here. I should remember to edit this part out so I sound smart. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. How long have you been doing stand-up?
On and off since, like, high school. But seriously for about, like, 3 years. I had an ex-boyfriend say, you can keep it as a hobby, but you're not very relatable. And so ever since then, I've been doing it. I've been really pursuing it. And proving
so you broke up with that guy.
Yeah.
You broke up with that guy and started doing it more.
Yeah.
I know what I was going to say. This film does seem like it is specifically geared towards people that are creative, of creative pursuit, because she, Wadros, is a playwright, a songwriter, and it is also this idea that goes around that depressed people, or all creative people, have some depression, or that there is like something that goes hand in hand with it, and I think it's like a thing we need to break out of a little bit, or just, I definitely had that moment, even before I was doing comedy, I had this thought of like, if I take drugs, I'm gonna not be as fun to be around, or something like that, not realizing I was probably being an asshole the entire time, but... Yeah, it does seem like there's a tie-in between... And I think you talk about this on your show as well, like the tie-in between mental health issues and creativity. So being a comic or having an outlet, it seems like that's like a... It goes hand-in-hand to some people, like, oh, all comics are depressed. I don't think that's actually true, but I mean, there was like... They didn't fit into society somehow.
Yeah.
Even if they're not... They're jolly comics that just had some other thing go wrong with them. So I don't think you need to be depressed to be funny. It doesn't hurt for some cases, right? Like, but I don't know. How do you think of that relationship between the two things? Or do you feel like if you got over-medicated, would it take away what makes you funny or your edge?
I think, tell me if you think this is right, and if you relate to this, but I think that comics aren't necessarily depressed. I think comics are people who notice hypocrisy or inconsistency, and things like that at a very young age.
Yes.
They notice what doesn't make sense about the world, and that can go hand in hand with mental illness or depression, but it doesn't necessarily.
That actually is almost specifically, I'm going to say, like, my philosophy about comedy might be a little bit too related to TED Talks, because have you seen this Daniel Dennett TED Talk?
Uh-uh.
He basically talks about humor... And he talks about, like, why we like sugar, why we like pornography, why we like laughing. And and it's the same thing. He's like, and this, you can just find this in TED Talks. Maybe I'll put a note in the show notes. His idea, or it's not even necessarily that it is specifically his idea, but the idea that he's purporting is, it's evolutionary biology angle. It's like, okay, why do we laugh? It had to serve some function in our lives at a primitive stage. Why do we like sugar? We needed the energy. It would help our brains. Why do we like certain things that are biologically sexual to us? Or like, or why do we like something like a cake never existed in nature when we were becoming, when we were hominids, right? Something like pornography didn't exist when we were hominids. If pornography had existed when we were hominids, we would not be here now, right? Everyone would have just dealt with their fuck genes in a different way, right? Like, you just wouldn't have that. So we just live in a society that is different than that. But the premise that humor is basically identifying hypocrisy, identifying something that's wrong. The glitches in the matrix, basically.
Yeah.
And that why do we like it, is we're rewarding ourselves. So this is like a very basic idea about comedy, which if you, like, I went to one comedy college, like, free session, and they're just like, it's about a surprise that doesn't hurt you. Anything that surprises you and doesn't hurt you is comedy. I'm like, okay, what? Like, that's a very weird way to phrase that. I think this makes more sense, right? It's like, oh, you're, like, observation. That's why is observational comedy so big? It's like your idea, like, oh, it's that thing that we've all experienced, didn't have a name for it, and we identify, oh, that's funny about that. And so it's just a reward mechanism in our brains for, like, why is it funny that a guy got hit in the nuts and fell over? It's like, oh, because no one should get hit in the nuts. It's funny that guy slipped on a banana peel because gravity, you know, like, all these things. So it is at least one theory about humor that sort of cuts across cultures, cuts across language.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting when we get in these debates about, and we're not necessarily, this wasn't what I was thought we were going to go, we're talking about, like, you know, Seinfeld saying comedy crap, or, you know, college kids are too PC for comedy. It's just like, no, the context of society is changing.
Yeah.
So what we identify as wrong changes. So now it's funnier now to make fun of someone for being transphobic than to just say tranny, like it would have been in the 80s. That's just society changing, right? So that still is there. But then, so I think that works as a general idea about comedy.
Yeah, I think so, for especially because humans are such pattern-seeking creatures, and humor is often just about breaking patterns or expectations of patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a level of exasperation there when you work so hard to try to perceive something and it doesn't happen, that we need to be able to cope with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was more infuriating when Seinfeld said that, or when he said that comedians these days don't try as hard as he did in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, you know.
In the 80s, when you could walk into any comedy club and get paid.
Oh, yeah. It's a completely different, yeah, it's a different beast, completely. Seinfeld, the last, we did an episode about that documentary Comedian, that 2002, which is basically Seinfeld and Orny Adams. It's like, oh, Seinfeld had nothing to at risk.
Yeah.
Basically, he's not been relatable since the 90s. Like, he has been, like, he's not the everyman. Like, he's just, like, a very warped idea of an everyman. Because, like, the everyman is not, is worried about just how they're going to pay the rent. So it's not, there's a lot of things that are there in that. I didn't read all of the thing that he wrote, or was it an interview that he had, where he talked about, like, comedy audiences being too PC?
I think it was an interview.
Yeah. This is going off in a different direction than I thought, but, going back to this, I don't know, I feel like we've kind of said everything we can say about, oh, you know, one thing I did, connecting to Saturday Night Live, the animators were the people that worked on a lot of the TV Funhouse stuff.
Oh, so I can see that now that you said that, yeah.
Yeah, so they worked on the TV Funhouse stuff, and maybe that's a connection to SNL, that we were just, we're going to, like, marinate. We're just going to bring it back to Lauren every time.
And Fred Armisen.
Oh, yeah, Fred Armisen's there. Sigourney Weaver as the voice of this woman. Did you find that distracting?
No, I didn't. But then I haven't seen Sigourney Weaver in a movie for a long time.
Oh, you didn't see Avatar?
Oh, wait, I did see Avatar. Never mind. Okay, I just don't remember Avatar. Right. I blocked Avatar from my memory.
So that means she did a good job, actually. She didn't distract you or anything.
No.
I think at one point I just pictured her, like, kind of clenched jaw doing it, you know? I didn't realize who Buscemi was. I thought Fred Armisen would be more distracting, but I think he actually blended in pretty well as just, like, as a voice actor. Again, is this a documentary? It kind of is. Is it? Is it more like an educational film? That's maybe more where it fits in, is, like, educational film?
Yeah. I guess so, yeah. Yeah, like a PSA, almost.
Do you watch a lot of documentaries generally?
Somewhat. Not that many. But that's...
You're watching more BoJack Horseman than Daria.
Yeah, yeah. I watch a lot of cartoons for grown-ups.
Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
Adventure Time, whatnot.
Yeah, I'm a baby.
I love all that stuff. I mean, I don't watch enough of it, really. I should be more up on my Bob's Burgers and my Adventure Time. I mean, I've met Mr. Pig, so we've done Ron Lynch's show, so that counts for something. Seeing as this... Is there anything else about depression that we should talk about?
I don't know, because depression is so different for every person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone experiences it differently, and everyone fixes it or doesn't fix it differently. I mean, you can't really fix it, but everyone treats it or doesn't treat it differently. I don't know.
Did you find her approach to be kind of platitude-y, or, like, filled with real generic advice?
Somewhat, but I also feel like there isn't really much advice to give. Mm-hmm. Everyone's so different. You know, if you look at drugs, for an example, you know how, like, some people will smoke weed and it will relieve them of anxiety. Other people will smoke and it will make them anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And every, you know, people don't treat prescription drugs like that, but they should be treated like that, as very different for each person.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's really no way to have very, you know, succinct, specific advice for someone with depression.
I do feel like if you were to be like, oh, hey, Vice is producing a half-hour animated thing about depression targeted at millennials, like, that would be a completely different experience than what we had here, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture what that actually would be like. It would actually probably be sponsored by a pharmaceutical company.
Probably.
With a specific drug they're trying to promote. Like, Johnny Walker mixes very well with this, you know, film that we have here. But what would be do you think that people that are your generation just are more tuned in, are they interested in therapy, or are they, like, over therapy, or are they interested in pharmaceuticals, are they anti, are they, like, you know, like, you're going to represent a generation now, because that's what I'm asking you, but, like, what? How do you think that it would be done differently to target a different demographic?
I think that people in my generation are more familiar with therapy, and in particular Ritalin, or drug treatments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, depending on your background and stuff like that, but people in general are more culturally familiar with these things.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that there is no uniform reaction to these things. Some people are really helped by it, and some people really like taking medication or going to a therapist, and other people had really bad experiences. So it just, you know, it's not an exact science. It's so new that it's just, you know, it's gonna create a whole range of reactions. So I think that something for millennials would go in with some implicit understanding, in terms of both the humor and the actual information. That said, I think one of my favorite parts was which really applies to any generation, is when she's surrounded by talking heads and they're giving her the reaction that most people get when they're depressed. You know.
Right, is it sort of like, oh, snap out of it, or like think about people who have it worse than you?
Exactly.
That's the one that actually, I've heard that before, and that's like, that doesn't actually help.
Yeah.
Now you've reminded me that there's famine also.
Yeah, people say, look how lucky you are. Oh, great, now I'm depressed and an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about white privilege. Oh, depression is a white privilege. That is like a hard one to deal with. The generation, like the way that, like a woman just strumming a guitar away while a poodle is dancing at the end, that does not resonate with your generation nor my generation as a Gen Xer and as a millennial.
Yeah.
Like those things are, is it really, there's going to be worse stuff happening all the time. I'm like, I had a guitar for 20 years. I didn't make me feel better. So that's like one thing. But I think, you know, the heart, it's one of those things where the heart's in the right place.
Yeah.
Right? Like the heart is in the right place. They want to like get people to seek help. So it does kind of work as a kind of piece of advocacy, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm pretty, like, I was pretty half-hearted on this thing. Like, I'm like, oh, I had to stop it. I'm like, ugh, I don't like where this is going. And then I, like, kind of came around at the end. So that's kind of how I feel about my depression. The movie, not my depression that I have.
I felt like when my parents made me go to Jewish Women's Theater, and it was a bunch of older ladies reading monologues, that's what it felt like. They and my parents were laughing so hard, and I was like, I don't, that's not really a joke. It's just kind of like a cute observation, and you need to put some jokes in there.
Yeah.
It's like how the Disney Channel will just have these inexplicable laugh tracks. I think that's the equivalent for our generation, or generations.
I mean, that actually is funny to me because my family, or like, I asked my mom about this. She grew up in Taiwan. There's not really stand-up comedy as a format in Taiwan. There's just sort of like a completely... There's comedy, but it's a very different genre. It's sort of like... It's more like a theater, like two people kind of theater dialogue thing that happens. And there's like puns in it. That's kind of what they like. So I guess I've always liked puns. Maybe that's genetic. But there's that makes sense. Like it's just related to a different audience. And that's what it's for. We like to leave by asking if there's a documentary you'd recommend. We already said Paris is Burning is one that you really like. Is there one that when you think of like, oh, the first documentary I really enjoyed and got me excited about documentaries, is there one for you there? Or is it Paris is Burning?
God, you know, I know I'll have one as soon as I leave this room. That's what happens.
Well, just because you are younger, I'm wondering, like, if there's something that maybe was, like, a History Channel thing or a Discovery Channel thing, or it could be, like, maybe not a feature film.
Because this is
not a feature film.
I always enjoyed those David Attenborough wildlife documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
I love animals, and I love how he pronounces the word sloth.
How does he say it?
Sloth.
Oh, that's cute. That's probably the right way if he said it.
I guess.
That is the right way.
I guess. Also, really loved that Joan Rivers documentary.
Oh, A Piece of Work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty fascinating.
It is.
I saw it about a year and a half before she passed away. Yeah. Just her work ethic is so intense.
Yeah.
And there's all that stuff that I remember thinking that I didn't see the thing that the teleplay she'd written about her husband committing suicide, but I remember thinking, man, that is, like, pretty tacky or whatever. But then, in the context of her whole life, I'm like, I kind of get why she did it like that.
Yeah.
Or even, like, I'm sure I wouldn't really have enjoyed her one-woman show that she was, like, doing in Edinburgh or whatever, but I'm like, you know, like, it's one of those things, like, yeah, let her have that. I mean, it's sort of like your parents watching the monologues of the old Jewish ladies.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, kind of like, it serves a purpose, and like, I'm glad it's there. It's not for me, but
yeah.
Same way, like, maybe my parents' generation was never going to listen to a podcast. I hope. At least in this case, that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hannah, thank you for coming by the show.
Thank you. Have fun.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please review, subscribe, and rate.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
This show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to suggest a documentary or a future guest, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.